My name is Thomas Otte and I'm a professor at the University of East Anglia in Norwich.
Why did you want to come to this conference this week?
Well, because I think Sarajevo 1914 is a very important event in the history of modern Europe. It's changed the course of European history and possibly even world history. And there's an awful lot that we need to rethink about the events of 1914. And it's for that reason that I'm here.
And curious, 100 years on, we're looking back at a couple of stray gunshots in a street that just happened to find the right, in inverted commas, target.
Well, yes, that's true, but it took a few vigorous pen strokes by lots of other people to amplify the gunshots, and that's really the true significance of Sarajevo.
Do you think Britons as a whole understand or view what happened in Eastern Europe with the importance it deserves?
Do you mean today or then?
Generally, people in the street, they'll talk about trenches, they'll talk about what happened in the West, but they might even know what happened in the East.
Oh, I don't think they do. I don't think they do. And, of course, for us, the origins of the war are always about the Kaiser's love of ships, and the war itself is about the Western Front, and to some extent that is true, of course. But a lot more British soldiers actually fell on the Macedonian Front, and that is often forgotten on the geostrategic shifts that actually gave rise to the outbreak of the war all in the East. They're all about the relationship between Germany and Russia, ultimately. And that, I think, is rather missing. But then that's how publics in general remember war. So if you talk to a Canadian, this war is very much about Canada's emergence as a modern nation. This is not about what goes on in Europe. It's about Canada. And the same about Australia, you know, Gallipoli and the Anzac myth and so on. So I don't think it's really surprising that different nations, different countries have rather different First World Wars, as it were. You know, look at the Germans. They don't like to commemorate the war at all because of the consequences that it had in terms of the Nazi period and the Second World War. So you know, we all carry different historical baggage around with us.
Yesterday we spoke, some of the speakers talked of who is to blame for the war. Is that a too facile a question to ask?
Well, if I had a glass of water, I would take a tactical sip now. I think, questions of guilt and retribution, I think, deeply ingrained in human nature, and so it is inevitable that these sort of questions would be raised after a war of such enormous proportions. Of course, the whole question was complicated because the treaty that ended the First World War included a war guilt clause that applied to the Germans, to the Austrians, the Bulgarians, etc. And that, of course, was politically motivated because it was there to justify the peace settlement and the reparations settlement that was to come after the Paris Peace Conference. So in that sense, maybe the question of guilt as such is not terribly useful, but I think it is perfectly acceptable to ask the question whether anyone is to blame and or whether this needs to be shared out or what the reasons were why Europe descended into this particular war.
And the chief culprits may be perhaps Germany, Serbia?
Well, Austria-Hungary was the only power that really wanted to have war. I think that much is quite clear, and one should not lose sight of that. And a lot of the historiography since 1914 or 1919 really has been about writing Austria out of all of this. And I think that's, you know, a problem. But the Germans are also to blame, not because I think they were criminally intent on war, but because they were criminally reckless in the strategy that they pursued. But other countries made mistakes as well. The French were certainly rather rigid and tightened the terms of the Franco-Russian alliance. The Russians, I think, had a very ill-conceived deterrent strategy in the summer of 1914 that was ill-conceived and ill-executed, and that helped to confuse matters. So there's a whole range of contributing factors. I wouldn't go as far to say that Europe slithered over the brink into the wars, as David Lloyd George said in his highly mendacious memoirs. But by the same token, I don't think it is right to focus merely on Germany and say it's Germany and there's a clear line from the Kaiser's Germany to Nazi Germany and so on. It's understandable that historians would have made that case in the years after 1945, because two wars had occurred and somehow Germany was involved in this and they had their fingerprints all over this. And quite possibly, you know, today we reflect the fact that, well, we've had a united Germany again for the past 25 years and not an awful lot has gone wrong or terribly wrong. And so maybe it is about historians coming to accept again that a united and powerful Germany is part of the European landscape, and we need to think about what the strategic consequences of that are for us today, as much as what that means for historical analysis of the years before 1914.